Washington Journal continues.
On Wednesdays at this time, we turn the spotlight on magazines. And this morning, we look at Reason magazine. Our guest is senior editor Peter Suderman. He has the cover piece, Down the Drain, How the Federal Government Flushed Away the $833 Billion Stimulus. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Suderman.
Thank you for having me.
The so-called stimulus, the bill we're talking about was passed in 2009. Is it still being implemented today? Where is it at?
So at this point, we've basically spent the bulk of that money. It's out in the system, and you know, sort of, we've put that money into the economy. We've borrowed that money, and so you know, at this point, it's more or less done. And what this piece was, in a lot of ways, was an attempt to look back at why we got the stimulus we got. Why we got a stimulus at all, and then how it was spent, and some of the theories that underlied, you know, sort of the design of the program.
Why did we get the stimulus? How did we come at the number that we arrived at?
That's a bit of a lengthy answer there. It really started actually on the campaign trail in 2008, before the economic meltdown that we saw in the fall of 2008. And so if you remember, the economy was looking a little bit jittery at that time, quite jittery. And so President Bush passed a $150 billion stimulus plan that just gave everyone a tax break. Actually, they basically gave most everyone in America, not just a tax break, but cut them a check for about $600. And so Obama, then on the campaign trail, sort of said, we need more stimulus, we need to do a follow-up, and it needs to be done differently. And so that was where the idea kind of started, was, okay, President Bush did his stimulus, it was taxes, it was a tax break, and it was tax-focused. And so Obama wanted to do a different kind of stimulus, one that was more focused on infrastructure spending, one that was more focused on projects that Democrats like, green jobs, that sort of thing. And so that was really where it got started. And then with the collapse of Wall Street, with, you know, sort of the major economic calamities that came right before the election that year, that's when there was really an impetus to get going on something bigger and larger and to get it out the door very quickly. And Obama kind of made it priority number one for his presidency.
The piece by Peter Suderman, Down the Drain, How the Federal Government Flushed Away $833 Billion in Stimulus. So give us your gauge of the impact it's had.
I think the best thing that I can say is that we don't really know, and that attempts to measure are in fact much less reliable, or at least we should be less confident in them than a lot of people say. And that's a big part of the point that I want to make in this piece, is that all of these efforts to measure the overall impact in terms of jobs, in terms of growth of the economy, of GDP, of the stimulus, when you look at those efforts to measure, what you really find is that we don't know a lot, that they're not actually great guides to what we know about, you know, to what the stimulus really did. And it's not because the people who are doing them are doing a bad job, it's because it's just very hard to measure an $800 billion program that's attempting to stimulate an entire national economy.
If you'd like to talk with Peter Suderman of Reason Magazine, here are the numbers to call. Democrats, 202-585-3880. Republicans, 202-585-3881. And independent callers, 202-585-3882. You write in your piece that when we look at trying to measure the success or lack thereof of the stimulus, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, a key metric of this is a multiplier. Explain what that means and why it's significant.
So this was a big part of the theory that gave us the particular stimulus that we got, was the idea that when the government spends money, it will create additional economic activity throughout the wider economy. So that, let's say the government spends $10, if you have a multiplier of 2.0, then for every dollar that the government has spent, it's going to create $2 of economic activity. So a $10 stimulus would create $20 of activity in the wider economy. And so that's sort of the idea of the multiplier. But if you look at a lot of the research into what multipliers are, what you really find is that economists don't really have a great idea, or a lot of agreement anyway, on what the multiplier is. We've seen big surveys of the best literature, and what they tell us is that anywhere from as low as 0.5, which means that if you spend a dollar, you only get 50 cents of economic activity, to 2.0 is a reasonable range. And so that the fact that economists and that the best research varies so much really tells us something about how uncertain this idea of the multiplier is.
David Firestone wrote a piece for the New York Times a few months ago, "Don't Tell Anyone the Stimulus Worked." And he looks at his opinions about the stimulus and why it was ultimately effective. He writes, "The stimulus did far more than stimulate. It protected the most vulnerable from the recession's heavy winds. Of the act's final cost, $1.5 billion went to rent subsidies and emergency housing that kept 1.2 million people under roofs. That's why the recession didn't produce rampant homelessness. It increased spending on food stamps, unemployment benefits, and Medicaid, keeping at least 7 million Americans from falling below the poverty line."
So that is talking about the portion of the foods of the stimulus that was spent on what we call transfer programs. And so the stimulus had three major parts. Part of it was a kind of trickle-out tax break that you saw in your paycheck over the course of many, many weeks. It wasn't a big lump sum like the Bush tax break. Part of it was what we think of when we think of stimulus, which is spending on infrastructure-type projects, construction, that sort of thing. And another big part of it was on these transfer payments, things like expanded unemployment benefits, more money for Medicaid, things like that. The thing that I get into in my piece is that, yes, those programs did ease the burden of a recession for many people, but it comes with a trade-off. Because when you make it easier to be unemployed, you have fewer people who are, you at least create incentives anyway, for people to not stop being unemployed, to not go look for a job. And so there's some research that suggests that as many as 2 to 3 million people would have had nearly as much disposable income under the stimulus from not if they hadn't had a job than if they had taken a job that was paid about the same as the job that they previously had had. And so when you've got a couple million people who have an incentive to basically, where it's easy, relatively easy anyway, I should say, or at least easier for them to not work, then you have to wonder, did those additional incentives in the transfer spending actually push people or make it easier for people to not work and make it easier for people to not find another job?
Let's go to the phones. Hear from Kramer in Columbia, Maryland on our independent line. Hi, Kramer.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question for your guest. Basically, which industries receive most of the money and which industries currently still owe the taxpayers?
So
I'll take my question off the line.
I haven't seen a breakdown of which industries in particular got the money, but a lot of the spending was on construction-type projects. These projects were divided up over a really large variety of types of firms. You had a lot of environmental engineering firms. You had firms that, you had people who are tile layers. You had construction firms. I start my piece talking with a story about a firm from Spokane, Washington, that got money, about $500,000, to install toilets in the Mark Twain National Forest, and sort of big bunker-style concrete toilets. And so that's where a fair amount of the money went. Like I said, also a fair amount of the money went to individuals through tax breaks, as well as through transfer programs like Medicaid, like unemployment benefits, that sort of thing. So I don't have a breakdown here, but the thing is, the companies that got the money don't have to pay back the taxpayer. That's not exactly how it works. In fact, what happens is that they get the money. Basically, the government is buying a product from them. It's like they're a contractor with the government, perhaps like if you think of like a defense contractor. The government is paying a company from Spokane, Washington, to install toilets, and they get paid to do that. That's not a loan. The borrowing here happens at the federal level, and so the stimulus was basically borrowed, the $833 billion. And so that's taxpayer money that adds to our federal debt is what it does, and creates and adds to the 16 trillion or so that we already have, or has added to the 16 trillion that we already have in federal debt.
More information about the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act can be found on the government's website. It's recovery.gov, and here's a map of the U.S. showing the funding for federal contracts, grants, and loans as part of the stimulus spending. You can see there the various states and where there was more money spent, less money spent. Our guest is Peter Suderman. He's a senior editor at Reason Magazine. We're talking about his recent piece about stimulus spending. Let's go to Rose in Memphis, Tennessee, who's a Democrat. Hi, Rose.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
In 08, Bredesen was a Democrat governor, and he participated in the stimulus program. In September of 08, my job ended, and so I was fortunate enough to be able to slide onto Social Security, which put me on a fixed income. And I benefited from the stimulus package. I had an assessor come in and find out what the home needed, and my furnace was about 20-some-odd years old, and I didn't know where the money was coming from. So they replaced my furnace, which was made in North Carolina. And the irony of it is that most of the contractors came out of Mississippi, but it put, and there was some other work done, some insulation was reinforced, but it put about 10 people to work for about 3 weeks to a month. And I understand that they did about 40,000 homes to retrofit to make them more energy efficient. And that's another thing. My energy bill has gone down. It's hard to say exactly how much, but it's much lower than it was before this was done. And I want to thank my president because I really appreciate what he did for me. Thank you.
So one of the caller talked there about the 10 people that were put to work doing some of this work. And one of the interesting things that I talk about in my piece is that in some of the surveys of businesses that took stimulus funds to perform work, what they did end up hiring people to perform work. They did end up hiring people to perform work that was specifically called for by the stimulus. But what they didn't do in some cases was hire people who were already unemployed. They hired people who had had jobs previously. And so it's one thing to say that the stimulus, that a firm hired people with stimulus money. It's another thing to say that it hired unemployed people. And it's really difficult to tell how many of the people who were hired with stimulus funds were previously unemployed. We have one interesting survey, but it's not a comprehensive survey. But there's some suggestion that actually a really quite large percentage of the people who were hired with stimulus funds to do some of these contracting jobs, to do some of these construction jobs, were employed before they were hired with the stimulus money.
Peter Suderman, senior editor at Reason Magazine. One of your colleagues did a piece attached to your cover story looking at what companies did with stimulus money in terms of jobs. And we can see here this pie chart. No new hires, 59%. Kept all new hires, 23%. Fired all the stimulus hires they took on, 12%. And then kept some new hires, 6%. What do those numbers mean to you? And we are seeing 23% that kept all new hires and 6% that did keep some.
So the interesting question here for people thinking about the effects of the stimulus is, with the people who were hired for the stimulus, were those people hired to create new full-time jobs that stayed in existence after the stimulus money went away. And what we see here is that in some cases the answer is yes, but in many cases the answer is that companies hired people with the stimulus money, but as soon as the stimulus money ran out, those people didn't have those jobs that were created by the stimulus, or funded with stimulus funds anyway. Those jobs didn't exist anymore. And so, again, it's this interesting question of how do you measure these things? Is it do we think of the stimulus as a success because it created some jobs temporarily for some people, and those jobs didn't last? Or do we think of the stimulus as not quite doing what we really wanted it to do when those jobs don't last and when those companies don't keep those positions on?
Mount Vernon, Washington. Chad, independent caller. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Your guest talked about the multiplier factor earlier, and I'm wondering, is his argument that the multiplier factor is wrong? Because he turned around and then he used his own numbers, which are based on statistics. I mean, everybody goes to college to teach statistics. Is he saying that the multiplier factor is wrong or is it inaccurate, or should we not be using it? If we shouldn't be using it, what should we be using to judge these programs?
So that's a great question. And the way I would say it is that when someone tells you that we are very confident that we know the exact effect of spending of a dollar of government stimulus, you should be a little bit wary of anyone who says that they're very confident. Because in fact, the best economists and the best economic research is not highly confident about the effect, the multiplier effect of government purchases, of government spending to stimulate the economy. And when you look at the surveys of the literature, you see that multipliers can be as high as 2.0 or in some cases 2.5. You also see that multipliers, some people think that the multiplier is below 1.0, even substantially, you know, as low as 0.5, 0.6. And that all of these, all of this research is pretty interesting, pretty useful research that we should be looking at. And so what that tells us is not that there's no such thing as a multiplier and not that we should ignore it completely, but simply that that we don't know as much about how the multiplier works as some people have kind of suggested we do.
Matt writes on Twitter and asks, is there really a meaningful difference between hiring unemployed workers and keeping employed workers from losing their jobs?
In some ways, no. If someone was going to lose a job, or if we were going to hire an unemployed person, you know, either way, you have a job that has been created or saved, as the lingo goes. And you know, if you remember back in 2009 when the stimulus was being passed, this was an issue of contention where President Obama. And the administration first used language suggesting that the stimulus would create several million jobs, and then they kind of backtracked a little bit when they realized that creating new jobs was not something that they wanted to be saying. And so they changed the language that they were using to say it created or saved jobs. And so, you know, it's an interesting point, and it's an interesting way to think about the effects of the stimulus, what it did. What it really tells us, again, is how hard this sort of thing is to measure and what we don't know about it, because the administration is using a kind of expansive way of talking about this just because it's so hard to figure out exactly which jobs the stimulus didn't fund and exactly where that money went.
Dallas, Texas, William, Democrats line. Hi.
How you doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling in regards to the stimulus. The gentleman said something about that when they first, the stimulus first, when they first started distributing the stimulus, they were giving the families $600. Well, he said he didn't mention the $250 that they were giving individuals that qualified. Also, most of the southern states kept the money and paid their bills off as far as they stayed and didn't put anybody to work. So there's some type of discrepancy in what this gentleman is talking about. Thank you. Bye.
So the $600 stimulus that I was talking about was a separate program that was passed roughly a year previous to the 2009 American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, which is the $833 billion stimulus that we think of as the stimulus in many cases. And the $600 checks were passed under President Bush. And so what I was talking about that, the thing to remember is just that on the campaign trail, that was something that was happening while Barack Obama was campaigning for president. And so he framed his calls for stimulus in many ways in response to President Bush's stimulus plan. As far as how states spent the money and what states did, there is some research that I don't get into in my article, but there is some research out there that suggests that, in fact, what states did was they took the money and they borrowed less with it, and that they didn't actually end up buying new things with the stimulus money, buying new things that would have created jobs, but what they did instead was simply to borrow a little less and buy about the same amount of stuff. And as a result, there was not a huge multiplier effect. That was the conclusion of a couple of economists who looked at how that money was distributed and spent at the state level.
Let's look at comments made by the CBO director, Douglas Elmendorf. Here's an excerpt. The CBO estimated that the stimulus created or saved up to 3.6 million jobs, but the director of the CBO has also noted that if the real world results were different, if the law created 5 million jobs, or if it created none at all, the agency wouldn't know. You've touched on this, but explain more about the questioning.
So this is a big thing that not many people really pay attention to, which is that the attempts to measure the stimulus by the Congressional Budget Office as the stimulus was being rolled out tell us a lot less than a lot of people seem to think they tell us. So as you said, the Congressional Budget Office estimated that the stimulus created up to 3.5 million jobs. There's also on that, as part of that, there's also a low end range. That's the top end. And the low end is about 500,000 or 600,000 jobs. So that in and of itself tells you something, which is that the range here is very large. And the Congressional Budget Office can put a top end and a low end on it. But, you know, it could be anywhere in between, and it could be as high as or as low as. But the other thing here is that the methodology for the Congressional Budget Office's reports is not to actually go and count the number of jobs or to track the number of jobs that were actually created under the stimulus. What they did instead was use the same model, the same economic model that they used to predict that the stimulus would create jobs before the stimulus was passed, before any of that money was spent. And so all they did was plug in new spending numbers into the old model. And so as a result, if something completely different, something that has nothing to do with the model and wasn't predicted by the model at all happened, the CBO's estimates wouldn't have caught that. And that's what Congressional Budget Office Director Doug Elmendorf was saying, was that these estimates can only tell you so much, and that if something totally different had happened, if the stimulus had created no jobs, or if it had created many more jobs than that top end range, we wouldn't know, because that's not how we are tracking the stimulus, and that's not what our reports are saying.
Peter Suderman is senior editor of Reason Magazine. The piece is Down the Drain: How the Federal Government Flushed Away $833 Billion of Stimulus. Kurt's up next, Port Tobacco, Maryland, independent caller.
Yeah, I wanted to raise the point that this was borrowed money. Now, if that stimulus money were in fact taxed, or an increase in tax, that's just redistributing wealth. And as far as borrowing the money, we'll never know how much it actually cost us. We've passed that debt on to our grandchildren. The interest payments on that $837 billion certainly will amount to a great deal of money. Plus, it could help accelerate us to this tipping point where inflation runs rampant, which, after all, is the cruelest tax of all.
That's a really good point, and that's a really good way to think about it, is that this is borrowed money. The thing that I would say here is that not only is it borrowed money, it's money that it is money that we will have to pay back through taxes, because to spend is to tax. Eventually, it gets paid back. And the other part of that is that the debt that is left over from the stimulus eventually creates a drag on the economy, according to the Congressional Budget Office. So what the Congressional Budget Office said in its report was that the stimulus increased gross domestic product, you know, made the economy bigger by somewhere between 0.3% and 1.9%. There's that big range again. But what they also said was that in a decade or so, when we're still left with the debt from having borrowed this 800 and some billion dollars, that's going to create a little bit of slowness in the growth of the economy. It's going to make it harder for the economy to grow, because all else being equal, when there's more federal debt, that makes it more difficult for the economy to expand.
Hutchinson, Kansas. Sheila is a Republican. Hi, Sheila.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to ask about the CPPW grants. I noticed about a month ago a report came out in Cause of Action, and I have been trying for the last 2 years to get someone to look into the illegal lobbying that is being funded with the CPPW grants.
So, sorry, go ahead.
It's tens of millions at least, and it's being used around the country.
It's not something I looked at in my article, and as far as the lobbying goes there, I don't think I can answer your question directly. It's just not something that came up in my research at all.
Here's the piece from Reason Magazine, Down the Drain. You can find it here in this latest edition of Reason. Tell us about what Reason Magazine is.
So Reason is a magazine of free minds and free markets. We're a magazine that comes from a broadly small L, not Libertarian Party, but Libertarian perspective, and the way we look at things, you know, is sort of how do we maximize freedom in the individual realm, as far both in terms of how our money is spent, but also in terms of how the government regulates personal activity. The bedroom and the boardroom is the preferred shorthand for how we talk about this.
Follow-up question on Twitter. The use of federal funds is widely recognized as a way to mitigate sudden economic crashes. Do you, Peter Suderman, oppose all stimulus?
No, I don't necessarily oppose all stimulus. And the idea that that is at the heart of this piece is not that we should necessarily avoid all stimulus at all times, but simply that this particular stimulus, and that the stimulus that we were able to get practically in the time that we had in the rush to do something, it may not have been as effective as was promised and as many people hoped. But that also we kind of just don't know. And so should we, you know, the idea is to kind of ask a question, should we be spending this amount of money on something where in many ways we'll never really know how well it worked or if it worked at all, and what ways it may or may not have worked.
Utica, Michigan, Corey joins us on the Democrats line. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
I'd just like to say that, yes, we may not see where the actual benefits are coming from, but let's say we never put it into place and it had gotten a million times worse. So What I'm seeing in my town and my community is we had a lot of car companies that needed bailing out, and if they hadn't been bailed out, thousands of people would have been out of a job. So yes, it's going to increase taxes, but it could have got worse. It is borrowed money, but sometimes you got to do something that costs money to make money. You know, if all those people had been put out of a job, our community would be in a horrible position. So I'm seeing the benefits kind of. You don't see more jobs created, but at least the jobs are saved. You know, it's like an opportunity. It's like opportunity cost. Would you rather have saved jobs or lost jobs, or would you just make new jobs? At least the jobs were saved.
Thank you, Corey. Colin from Michigan.
So what you get at there is a really interesting idea about counterfactuals about what would have happened if we hadn't done this stimulus, or if we had done a different stimulus, taken a different approach to addressing the economic crisis. And that is the big what if that is at the heart of macroeconomics that we can't really resolve. And it's why it's so hard to track and to measure this kind of economic intervention. One of the economists I talked to in the piece, who has done both her own research on the effects of stimulus and also surveyed a lot of the high quality research, described the big problem to me something like this. She said, you know, what we really want as macroeconomists is the ability to take a whole bunch of countries, and with some of them, we'll try a certain amount of stimulus in them, and with others, we'll have no stimulus at all. And so what we'll end up with is a controlled experiment. That's the kind of controlled experiment that you just can't get in macroeconomics. You can't play games with people's, with the world's economies that way. And that is why the Congressional Budget Office has said, actually very early on in the process, that it's just impossible to know what would have happened in the absence of a stimulus. We have no idea. Because we cannot create, we cannot know what the counterfactual is. We can't know the answer to that big what-if question. And so what my piece was about and was really sort of was the uncertainty created by that lack of counterfactual and our inability to determine what happened without, you know, what would have happened if we hadn't done this stimulus.
Let's hear from a Republican in Michigan. Laura's in Troy. Hi.
Hi there. Mr. Suderman, I tuned in a little late, so I don't know the premise of your magazine. Is it right-wing, left-wing? Also, I wonder if you have any information in there on farmers that get subsidies. Now, for example, I read in the Wall Street Journal a number of months ago where Senator Grassley, his son, has a farm, or they have a farm, of course it's the son, and they get $738,000 a year subsidy for not growing things. Is that factored into the stimulus? And in regards to down the drain, I think that that's doesn't sound good to me, because I feel that if there are some Americans that have gotten jobs as a result of the stimulus, whether it is for a few months or longer, it is people that are benefiting in the fact that they're not collecting unemployment, and things are better in all respects for our country, as opposed to everybody just being on unemployment, which is a tragic thing. And I think that the countries in Europe that did not follow our stimulus are hurting more than what we are. Thank you very much. I enjoy C-SPAN.
Thank you. So a couple of questions there in terms of farm subsidies. Farm subsidies are mostly doled out through a federal farm program that isn't part of the stimulus. And so the programs that pay people to not grow things, that's mostly a separate program from the stimulus. And Reason Magazine published by the Reason Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We're a nonpartisan nonpartisan nonprofit organization, but we, like I said, take a generally libertarian approach to the world: free minds, free markets. How do we ask questions about how we maximize freedom in the individual realm, whether it's the economic or personal freedom. And then the other issue was about who has gotten jobs and who has benefited here. And it's certainly the case that we know that positions have been funded by the stimulus. We have evidence of this. And so when we've seen some politicians suggest that there were zero goose egg jobs, I think was a quote of one politician from on the campaign trail last year or the year before, we know, in fact, that the stimulus did fund some jobs. But again, the question is, what would have happened if we hadn't had a stimulus? And also, is it funding jobs? Is it funding people who were employed beforehand or people who were unemployed beforehand? And it looks like in many cases, at least, the stimulus ended up funding jobs for people who already had jobs, in part because the positions they were funding were highly technical, required a fair amount of experience. As the one economist who I talked to for the story told me, the best person for a job in many cases already has one. And so what you end up having to do is hire somebody who could have gotten work, did have work in many cases, somewhere else.
Ron shares his opinion on Twitter and writes, a patient that is alive only because of life support is not alive. Our economy is only alive because of stimulus and Fed funding. And you can share your thoughts with us on Twitter by writing at CSPANWJ. Our guest is on Twitter. You can find him at Peter Suderman, also Reason Magazine as at Reason. Let's hear from Mike, Prescott Valley, Arizona, Independent.
Yeah, good morning. How are you doing?
Morning.
Yeah. We have to define, I'd say, jobs versus employment. I mean, every job that the federal government creates is deficit spending. There's no profit margin involved. Every employee that a private sector hires, there's a profit margin involved. So, I mean, the government's just throwing money after money after money into their job pool, and the private sector is not creating any revenues to replace the money in that job pool.
So with the stimulus, so one thing I would say is that with the stimulus, many of the positions that were funded with purchasing with the stimulus were with private companies. And so, you know, it's a little bit difficult to figure out, you know, you can't just say that, we have to think about how to split up these categories of things with we're using public money to pay private contractors to employ private individuals. That's part of the stimulus. But there's it is deficit spending, and it is adding to the debt. And as the Congressional Budget Office says, you know, all else being equal, when you add to the debt, in the long term, even if there's an initial upfront boost to GDP, in the long term, it does make economic growth for the national economy somewhat more difficult and some more likely to be slower rather than faster.
Tim, Toledo, Ohio, Democrats line. Welcome.
Hi, Mr. Suderman.
Hi.
I have a quick observation and then a couple of questions. As I recall, about one-third of the stimulus bill went to tax cuts and expanded loopholes. I think that was $280 billion. So could we make the observation that not all the stimulus was borrowed money? A big chunk of it was tax cuts. And my questions have to do with the the issue of the funding of the computerization of health records. I don't have the numbers right off the tip of my tongue, but I think it was $20 or $30 billion went to initiate the computerization of American health records, and I wonder how we would have started that process if we hadn't got the kickstart from the Reinvestment Act of 2009, which I have noted is producing more efficient doctor's visits. And my final question, if you can take all this in at once, is that there was a big boost in Medicaid funding in 2009, and that was a godsend to our family because I think my mother would have been kicked out of her assisted living residence in the last 3 years of her life. She died in late 2012 at age 92. How many elderly people do you think would have been displaced if it hadn't been for the expansion of the Medicaid funding in 2009? So those are my questions.
A couple of issues there. Let's talk first about the issue of tax cuts. So for when the government gives tax cuts, that can actually show up in the budget more or less the same way that spending does. So imagine if the government is spending, say, $1 trillion, and then it gives a tax cut. And if it's not paying for that tax cut, it still ends up being effectively, from a budgeting sense, borrowed money and adding to the deficit. It can add to the deficit in the same way that borrowed money, that just borrowing to spend does, if you're not cutting spending to go along with that. The health IT portion is a really interesting portion of the stimulus because we spent quite a lot of money creating incentives for medical providers to adopt electronic health records. And what these electronic health records were supposed to do was make medical make the medical world more efficient, make it cheaper, and start the process of bringing down health spending, and or at least getting it under control. And just in the long term, health spending is a big problem just for the economy, and it's a really big problem for the federal government because of all of its health health spending commitments. But what we saw with the health IT portion was that it's ended up funding programs that don't talk to each other. And so all of these hospitals now have these proprietary locked-in systems where they have their internal health IT records for themselves, but it's very difficult for them to send those records to other medical providers. And so it hasn't in many ways facilitated the kind of communication. What it has facilitated is additional spending, because what they've used those programs to do and what those programs have allowed them to do is to game the medical billing systems. And so there's been some interesting reporting on this that's actually showed that it's increased spending for hospitals. As far as Medicaid goes, I don't know exactly how many people, but it did end up funding a lot of Medicaid, additional expanded Medicaid for the states.
Peter Suderman, senior editor at Reason Magazine. Here's the piece, Down the Drain. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
That's all for Washington Journal today. We'll see you at 7 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow. Let's go to the House floor.
The House will be in order. The chair lays before the House a communication.